Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here back on our program Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, it's always on a Tuesday, she is here and we talk about growing things in the home landscape. We can take questions about lawn, trees, shrubs, ornamentals, stuff you can eat, also about houseplants. If you have questions, I know she will do her best to help you out, and all you have to do is give us a call, 333-4455. We also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much.
Good morning.
Now, we were just, before we started here, we were looking at some photographs on my computer that were sent in by a listener who has a pine problem. Now, and I don't know if the listener is listening and he can call in and give us some more information, because one of the things that Sandy was had a question about was what kind of pines these are, and we're not actually quite sure, other than it looks like it has fairly long needles, and we're thinking, well, could that be Scotch pine? I don't know. And it looks pretty clearly like there is some kind of insect problem going on here, where person says they have some pines here. They've lost one. Another looks like it's dead. And some others around there have died or are showing signs of the same condition. And it looks probably like it is some kind of insect problem. And he wants to know, you know, what can he do to try to prevent loss of more trees based on the pictures, on all that. Can you say, do you think you can say something about that?
Well, I think it does look like a Scotch pine just by looking at the size of the needles and all. And it also, Scotch pines do have some problems right now, and have actually had problems for a number of years now, called pine wilt nematode. And it's actually a nematode, which is a, you know, kind of microscopic roundworm, but it's actually carried by a beetle. So there's an insect involved in that whole process. And what you usually see with Scotch pine, and Scotch pines sometimes the needles are about 2.5, maybe 3 inches long, kind of, sometimes they twist a little bit, but on older trees, you'll notice kind of an orange underbelly on the trunk, on the bark. It's kind of orangey underneath, or if you look up in the tree, it's kind of orangey, and that's usually a pretty good indication it might be a Scotch pine. But the reason I mention that is that because Scotch pines tend to be very susceptible to pine wilt nematode, and the what you usually see is that one limb kind of goes kind of grayish looking, and then it dies fairly quickly, and it's called flagging, where you get one limb sort of dies quickly, and then maybe within a couple years the tree's dead. Mm-hmm. And that will pass from tree to tree as the beetle actually passes the nematode from tree to tree. So it's real important, especially I would think now, certainly get rid of any of those dead trees. That's very important, and that would be important anyway, just to make sure that there isn't some infectious thing going on there, is to get those trees out of there, either, you know, bury them, burn them, something, but get them out of there. That would be very important. And unfortunately, there really isn't any kind of control measure other than good sanitation for pine wilt nematode. So that's why it's so important to do it now, and certainly not wait until later on when the beetles might go ahead and emerge and then go ahead and infect the other trees. So that would be one thing. The U of I Plant Clinic can do sampling for pine wilt nematode, but they're closed for the season. Now, come May, they will reopen next year. So to really find out for sure, that was what we could do, but we wouldn't be able to do that till next year.
Okay. Well, so that's probably about the best that we can do.
Get the dead trees out of there.
All right. And there's no, so this is not the kind of thing that you can spray, and there's no kind of insecticide or anything?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just the beetle comes in and feeds and can feed for a very short period of time. It's very difficult to sort of time the sprays to try to kill the beetle, and even if the beetle feeds and you kill the beetle afterwards, it's too late because it's already infected the tree. So it's a difficult disease to control other than just good sanitation, getting the trees out of there and going from there. So if they're Scotch pines, they've been dying over a number of years, they've been dying quickly. A pretty good guess would be pine wilt nematode.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps. That's about, at this point, I guess, about the best we can do to respond to the call. Well, other folks, if you have questions you'd like to talk with Sandy, you can give us a call here. 333-9455 is the Champaign Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. So is it too late to try to get grass seed to germinate if you have some spots where you're trying to get some grass going?
Yeah, it's pretty iffy at this point because the problem is that especially Kentucky bluegrass doesn't germinate very well at cold soil temperatures. Yeah. You know, it's been fairly warm, you know, so the soil temperatures are up there a little bit, but, you know, it's going to be dropping soon. And the problem is even if it goes ahead and germinates, we're so close to having really cold, especially cold, windy weather, that the odds of the seedlings actually living through the winter are probably pretty remote. So at this point, I really wouldn't go with any grass seed unless you just truly felt like you had to get something out there and something to cover. Say you got a muddy spot or whatever, then I'd probably go with something like an annual rye, which is not a good long-term grass, but it germinates quickly. It's inexpensive. You could get something out there, get it going, and knowing that next spring you're going to kill that off and then put in a good grass. So if you had to, I'd go that route.
Okay, I got some spots where I put a weed and feed on where there was some creeping charlie, and it killed the creeping charlie.
All right.
But now I have some bare spot. It's just bare dirt.
Yeah,
and I should have, of course, I know I should have been on this kind of before now, but, you know, I didn't really get
and you, you know, if it's small spots, you might want to try it. I certainly wouldn't spend a lot of money and do large spots at this point. Yeah. Well, it gets pretty risky.
Okay. Well, we have a couple callers here. First off, someone in Southern Illinois on our line 4. Hello.
Hi. I'm glad you're on today. I had a question about what you recommend for removing a stump of an old tree we had cut down. It was an apple tree. And I know there's stump removal people, but there's also products, I think, that you bore holes into the stump and put in. Do you know what would be better?
Yeah, unfortunately, any of that's going to still take time. So I don't know. It's a matter of, you know, how fast you want the stump to be gone. I mean, stump grinding is the quickest way, obviously, and the fastest way to get it in. Most of that stuff that you can put into the stumps, it might help a little bit, but in the long run, you might be better off just to go ahead and try to cut it down as much as you can, but then just pile soil on it, because soil itself is going to help it to rot.
Oh, okay. Do you know if you did bore and put stuff in, how long that might take?
How long it take?
Yeah.
It depends on how tall the stump is and how big the stump is.
I see.
And it was it a dead tree or was it a live tree?
The tree was dead.
Oh, well, then that actually helps. It should decompose fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, over a year or so, you should it gets to the point where you should be able to sort of break it apart to the point where you can flatten the area out, I would
and
think.
And is there, I'm not going to plant right on top of it, but nearby. And I've heard people say that the roots can still be living. Like, you know, 3/4 of the tree was dead. My husband cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
There was some live growth. Will trees still be sucking moisture from the area? I mean, the roots still be sucking moisture?
Well, you'd find out real quick if it was still alive because it'd be sending up suckers because apple trees love to sucker up, as in, you know, they send up new shoots.
It's dead. It's a goner.
Yeah. If it hasn't done that, you've cut it down, it's been a while since you cut it down, and it hasn't suckered up, then it's probably pretty well was on its way out anyway, and so it's just a matter of all those roots are going to take a while to decompose, and you may see mushrooms pop up and stuff like that, but it's not going to be an issue for other trees other than just trying to dig through that to plant something, I suppose.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
All right, thank you for the call. The next caller here in line is someone in Champaign, and they're on line 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I have a question. I'm not even sure if this is a good idea or if it's even legal. But
we would never endorse anything illegal on this show.
Right. Well, that's why I'm hoping to get a little bit of, I guess, legal advice. We are building a new house, and we have a big yard. And my father has a place up in Michigan, 40 acres of beautiful hardwoods, birches, and pines. And I was wondering if it is possible to transport some young seedlings from Michigan, and then if it is, what would you recommend in terms of, I mean, I love birches, but I think that they might not grow so well here. So do you have any suggestions or advice in that area?
I guess a couple things. I mean, I'm with you. I'm not sure you're going to get much success actually bringing birches down here. It's not that they're not cold hardy, is that they really don't like our summers all that terribly much.
Okay.
And especially ones that are already growing up there.
Yeah.
You know, they're ready for that kind of an area, not necessarily for our area. So I'd be a little bit concerned about that. Also, right now, we've got so many problems with borers and some other insect problems that are being transferred from, now, not necessarily on birches, but certainly on ash and some of the other trees that we're having problems with. So at this point, I'm not recommending anybody moving any trees from state to state simply because we're having so many problems right now with some of these exotic pests. And when nurseries are growing these plants, they're inspected. And
okay.
So when trees are transported over state lines and they've gone through an inspection process or whatever they need to make sure that we're not transferring these insects. So that would be my other concern about just moving plants around that way. So okay. If you can get something local, that'd be much better. And
okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why I was asking, because I knew about there's some, I think that there's a law now against transporting firewood, but I wasn't sure about live trees or if it was even recommended.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's to be on the cautious side, not necessarily, you know, certainly with ash trees, you should never do that because of the emerald ash borer, but
okay.
They can always hitchhike, unfortunately.
Okay, all right, well, thank you for the advice. Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for the call. Our guest this morning, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. It's our monthly show on lawn and garden care. And if you have questions on something that grows in the home landscape, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have another Champaign person here next, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about some English ivy that I have had growing around the foundation of my house for quite a few years, and I finally decided that I should try to grub it out because it's too invasive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm either going to put some kind of small evergreen shrubs in that area or perhaps try to start over with vinca. My question is, I don't think I've gotten anywhere near all of the roots of the ivy out despite my best efforts. So should I just leave everything sort of bare over the winter and next spring and try to continue to exterminate the ivy before I do anything else?
Yeah, I really would, because you'd find it's going to be much easier if there's nothing else there than to try to, you know, because it'll start interweaving itself among any other plants that you plant, and then you'll find that it's just such a headache trying to get it out and not ripping out the plants that you do want. So if you can wait, that'd be wonderful.
Okay, then when I do see that it starts cropping up again next spring, is Roundup an appropriate thing if I can't get all the roots grubbed out?
You certainly could do that. It's going to be obviously much more successful if you can get some of the bigger stuff out.
Yeah.
And then any of the young stuff that comes out, then certainly you could use one of the non-selective herbicides on that too, just to sort of take care of it. I mean, you can try smothering it out. Unfortunately, English ivy is really a tough one.
Right.
You know, by using something like, you know, the whole, you know, wet newspaper and mulch and all that kind of stuff to try to smother it out. But unfortunately, that stuff is so woody. And that would probably work on the real young stuff, mm-hmm. You know, just to try to smother it out.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. I go to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about rhododendron.
Mm-hmm.
I have several rhododendron that are planted next to the house on the east side in a raised bed, and they don't look like they have insect infestation, but the leaves just continue to turn yellow and drop
mm-hmm.
off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, did you plant these, or did somebody else plant these, or?
I planted two. Someone else planted two.
Okay. And so, do you know? Did you do anything to the soil ahead of time before you planted them, or when you planted them, did you add anything to make it more acidic, or do you remember any of that?
I have done some of the powder additives. I mm-hmm. can't remember what it's called.
Probably
to the soil.
Sulfur or something along those lines, maybe?
Yes. Ionite. And other than that, no. It was a brand new bed
mm-hmm.
post-construction,
mm-hmm.
so it has fairly rich soil.
Mm-hmm.
I have added pine needles and things of that nature, but have not done anything more specific
right,
than that.
Right. Well, I guess a couple things, because you know with rhododendrons and azaleas and blueberries and a few other things, you know, they really like an acidic soil, much more acidic
mm-hmm.
than what we have here, usually about 4.5 or so, whereas our soils here might be 6.5 to 7. So they really like it to be more acidic. So you might try getting a soil test now, which would be great. Go ahead and get a soil test, find out where the pH is, and then that would probably tell you a lot. I have a feeling it's probably not acidic enough. So it may be one of those things. It's always easier if you can do it ahead of time before you actually plant the plants,
right.
rather than trying to sort of correct it later. So if it's not too horrible, sometimes you can continue to add the sulfur during the growing season. Use something, one of the acid-loving fertilizers, to try to help to get that pH down. But it would really help you a lot to know, get a soil test, find out where you are in that route. Also, they need really well-drained soil. They like moist soil, but they like it to be well-drained.
Yeah,
so it should be if it's in a raised bed. I would think it's
yeah.
So that part should be good. And also the fact you've got it on the east side of the house, that's great because they hate that late afternoon sun. So there's a lot of good things going on here. But I just really wonder, the pH would be the one thing I'd really wonder about a lot on that. And then just to make sure that they don't get dry in any period of time, you know, too dry, because they hate to dry out too much.
Right.
So that would be the other thing. So I would really check the pH, but I have a feeling it's probably what's going on.
Great. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. We're in our house, in our front yard, we planted a small rhododendron a couple of years ago, and it never really seemed very happy.
Yeah,
and just this summer, at one point, it just
crowed.
That was it.
Said goodbye.
Said goodbye, and it's just dead. And
yeah,
in fact, use one of the water-soluble fertilizers for those kind of plants. And I guess I've come to the conclusion maybe just the big problem was that spot, it was just the wrong spot for that plant.
Well, it could be.
I think that's, I don't know that I really quite understand. All I know is that, you know, you can take a plant and put it one place and it can not do very well. And then you can dig it up and you can move it to another spot and it'll be very happy.
Yeah.
So sometimes the key is just finding the right place to put the plant.
Right, right. And there's some dynamics, I'm sure, going on there. Soil dynamics are, you know, just where it is, how much wind it gets. It's a little different from this spot to that spot. But I think definitely, you know, rhododendrons, azaleas are really ones that you really have to think about ahead of time. I mean, it really would be, the ideal thing would be, if you're thinking about planting them, would be to prepare the bed now. Get the bed ready, get a soil test, add the correct sulfur, add peat moss, lots of organic matter, and really get the area prepared. And then that way it has a chance to has a chance for the sulfur to work, because it doesn't work right away, you know, immediately. Give it a chance to sort of work. So then by next spring, that would be a really good bed then to go ahead and plant into. So I think that's the problem. We're not used to thinking, you know, that far in advance or having a chance to do it that far in advance. But I think if you're really planning on those are plants that really, you'll be so much better off if you can plan ahead of time for those.
Well, then if you do that, though, and then once the plant gets established, then in the out years, how do you continue to satisfy that keep continuing to maintain the kind of pH that plant
right.
likes?
Well, that's when you use like the acid-loving, fertilizers for acid-loving plants. Mm-hmm. Those would be the kind of things that you come in, because those are things that, you know, especially some of them that are meant to even be used on the leaves, it's a sort of a quick fix. It helps them, because the problem is at really higher pHs like this, they don't have enough iron available to them. These are plants that need a lot of iron, and at higher pHs, the iron just isn't available. It's there, but it's just not available. Mm-hmm. So we just have to, you know, get the pH down and then have it the iron in a form where the plants can take it up. So if you get those kind of fertilizers in there, and that'll help. It gives sort of quick fix, but it'll also help the soil, at least in the immediate area around the plant, to help to change the pH. It's just hard to do it, you know, deep in the soil if you haven't done that ahead of time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk with some more people here. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Charleston, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah.
I have two questions. One is about volunteer trees. And I bought some house, and all these trees have come up. And when I tried to uproot them, I found there was these big woody root systems underneath. And I'm wondering what you would suggest I do to get rid of that. And my other question is about a sweet gum tree. I had it treated last spring, and I noticed that all the balls are coming out again, you know, this fall. And I'm wondering, is there any real way of kind of reducing the number of gum balls that grow?
Well, as far as the volunteer trees, so you're trying to get rid of them. You're not trying to dig them up and move them somewhere.
Yeah, they're in a daylily patch.
Oh, yeah, that could be an issue for you. I guess you can either, you know, continue to try to dig them out, which I know sometimes gets to be kind of tough. But, you know, as long as there's that root there, you can also, with some of the herbicides, like the non-selective herbicides like Roundup and a few others, and some of the brush killers, you can actually do what's called a cut surface treatment. And it'll say it on the label, but you can actually cut the stem and then immediately paint on the herbicide. So you're not spraying it. You're just painting it on. And that way it's very selective. You can just get that one spot. And generally that's pretty good on a lot of those young tree seedlings that just keep popping up again. Mm-hmm. So just read the label. It'll say cut surface treatment on how to do that and just do that. And usually I've had pretty good success doing it that way.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the other thing as far as the sweet gums, so you had it treated so that it wouldn't form balls, but it did it anyway?
Yeah, a guy came and stuck, little capsules, I guess,
right,
around the circumference of the root. And,
right.
But, yeah, they're all back. And I'm wondering if, and it cost a fair bit of money, so I'm wondering if I could do it myself or and do it more effectively. Or if it's just a lost cause.
Well, there are treatments for sweet gum balls and actually ginkgo and a few other things that we don't really like the fruits on necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is with all of those, timing is crucial. You have to do it at just when the flowers are just starting to come out. And unfortunately, those are plants that don't have, really showy flowers. So it's really hard sometimes to figure out when. I guess my suggestion would be to discuss this with a person who did this for you, because perhaps timing wasn't quite right, and perhaps you can work out something that for this next year. I wouldn't give up on it because I have seen pretty good results with that.
Okay.
They never get rid of it 100%, but what I've seen at least will reduce it by about 80%, which with sweet gum balls, sometimes that's good. We're pretty happy with that.
That's what he promised, but I've seen them. I just looked out, and there's quite a few.
That's why I think you need to go back to that person and discuss it with them, that it didn't quite work out. And most folks are more than willing to make good on these kinds of things. But to realize that probably was a timing issue, to be honest with you, on when it was applied.
Right.
And so I wouldn't necessarily give up on that. There really is no kind of homeowner stuff. There are some sprays, but the trouble is on huge trees, most of us just don't have the equipment to spray a large tree. It's just not really appropriate for us to be able to do that. So unfortunately, there isn't much a homeowner can do. So.
Wait, can I get those little capsules and do it myself or not really? Do you have to be licensed or something?
Not necessarily if it has to be licensed. I'm not sure if that's available to homeowners. You could do some searching on the web, probably.
Okay.
But I'm not sure how well that's available. The one thing is you do have to know exactly how to do it because you don't want to go too deep within the tree. So it's not putting a hole and sticking it in. So you don't want to go too deep. You have to get it at the right. So there is a certain amount of training involved there.
Okay.
So it might be something that I would go back to the professional, to be honest with you, and then work something out with them.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you so much for your help.
Uh-huh. Okay, very good. Thank you. And we'll go next to Urbana. We have a couple of Urbana people here. First line number one. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I'm calling to ask Sandy about a lawn that we have in our backyard. We had four dogs at one time, and they were pretty much out there, and they've all gone, but we've tried to seed it, to get grass to come back. And in a way, it is kind of shady, so that's an issue too. But I'm wondering if there's something we can do. It's like maybe half of it is sort of taken, but it's very spotty, to prepare it over winter for maybe a better chance in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to get my husband to soil test. I think that's probably I'm thinking that's the first thing we should do.
Yeah. You may want to try that. That would be one thing. Now, does it get any sun at all?
Yeah, it gets some.
3 or 4 hours or maybe?
Probably about 3 hours.
Okay, because that's probably about the minimum. Even the shade-loving grasses need some sun, so you're kind of dealing with the minimum amount of sun here. The other thing I'd really wonder about is, especially if they're bigger dogs, you get a lot of soil compaction. So did you work the soil up at all? Did you get a chance to do that?
We did. We actually did. I don't know if we rototilled it, but we did a lot of prep.
Okay, so you did loosen the soil up and all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
And then what time of year did you try this or do this?
We tried it in the spring, and we tried it in, late summer.
Yeah. And then felt pretty comfortable that you were able to water it enough?
Yeah. Watered it enough.
Yeah. So you may want to, I think you're on the right track, in that you may want to try a soil test just to see if there is something, that's a little odd about the area.
Okay.
And I don't know what kind of seeds you were looking at, but were you looking at some for the shady areas?
Definitely shady seeds. But I mean, it was a mix. You know, we got it at the local hardware store.
Okay.
And it said Shady Mix.
Okay.
So is there something you could suggest that might do better?
Well, I think, you know, grass seed is one of those things where you get what you pay for normally.
Okay.
And so I guess a couple things. Sometimes people that don't plant it in enough density.
Oh.
I mean, you really have to read the label. When it tells you, you know, 6 pounds per, you know, whatever, you need to make sure that you do that. Because sometimes just density-wise, we tend to sort of, you know, not make it quite as dense as we should on some of those. And especially for some of the shade-loving grasses, they don't kind of creep out quite as much as some of the other ones. So you really have to watch that. So I would just watch the density. And also, usually we're probably looking at some of the creeping fescues. Sometimes there are some shade-loving Kentucky bluegrass in there, but they should say something like Kentucky bluegrass eclipse, Kentucky bluegrass glade. So there actually should be cultivar names attached to these, and there should be a nice mix and blend. In other words, some diversity in there to sort of get it going. So it sounds like you've done all the other things right, and so it may be just a matter of the soil test density and then just looking at the species that you put out there.
Okay, so would you suggest we go to a nursery instead of going to a hardware store, that we might get more variety that way?
Well, you know, you may or may not. You know, I think probably we have some great fact sheets. Are you here in town? I don't remember. I'm sorry.
In Urbana, yeah.
Okay, you may want to, you can either go on to our website, the Extension website, and it's just, you can go there, and we have all kinds of information about lawns and lawn care and what mixes to use and blends to use. Also, you can come down to our office, and we have some great fact sheets that actually will give you some information on density and different cultivars to look for. And I think if you're sort of armed with that information, you can do some shopping around and just kind of see where you can get things. Sometimes the garden centers will have more of their own mixes, you know, where they've actually made their own mix rather than the box kinds of things. So sometimes you have a little bit more, a little bit more available or different or more choices, I guess I should say.
Okay. So in terms of preparing it for the next season, over the fall, is there anything we can do?
Well, you could certainly top dress it, you know, with compost or, you know, something along those lines. You can get out at the Landscape Recycling Center. You can get some great compost and you could top dress with that. And that would certainly help get some nutrients in there. Some of those kind of things would certainly help. And this would be a great time of year to do that. And you could just top dress it with an inch or so of compost and that'd be great.
But we should probably have it soil tested too to just see what's going on.
I would, because you just sometimes, especially some of these areas, you're just not quite sure what's going on.
Okay, and where do you do that? Where do you get it?
The soil testing. You can check in the yellow pages of the phone books, but here locally there is an ASM Soil Labs on North Mattis,
okay.
As in way North Mattis. I mean, north of Olympia Drive. I mean,
okay.
It's way north Mattis. But you can certainly take samples out there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sandy.
Sure.
All right, thanks.
Good luck.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She is a horticulture educator at U of I with U of I Cooperative Extension, Champaign County. And here is, she's here on the program once a month on a Tuesday. It's almost the second Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. Just while we're on the subject, I do want to make sure I mention real quick that the Extension folks have some websites specifically devoted to fall and fall subjects, including things like where you can go to see nice fall foliage and things like where best places to go to pick pumpkins and apples and all that kind of stuff. And probably, do you think that is the best way just to go through the ACES? Start with ACES and go from there?
Or you can just go to extension.uauc.edu.
Oh, okay. Well,
just go there.
Okay, good.
And then there's all kinds of things on horticulture as well as actually a whole lot of other things, family life issues and nutrition and you name it.
Right. So that is a good, throughout the growing season, that's always a good source of information on dealing with plant selection and insect problems and disease problems and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I just did indeed want to mention these particular ones that were fall related. For those of us
for fun
who are happy that fall is here.
I take it you're one of those.
Oh, well, now that you mention it.
It is lovely.
Yes.
It's been beautiful,
earlier in the summer, I think it was about August 1st I started getting tired of summer, and I said that one here one morning, and Sandy said, just to me, you do realize I'm a horticulturalist, don't you? This is my life. You do understand that, don't you? And I said,
it's the growing
yes,
season.
Yes, I understand that. Okay. Well, Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I think I skipped over somebody, and I'm really sorry. In the Wellington, we'll go to there, in line number two. Hello. Caller there in line two. Oh, well, maybe I kept waiting too long. How about near Chicago here, line four?
Hello.
Yeah, yeah.
I just was listening just briefly and I about that ivy. I have really bad, I think it's creeping Charlie, but I'm not sure. Someone told me that's what it was. Well, I've had it several years, and I tried to stop it, but it's so much now that it's such a big area of my backyard. Mm-hmm. And my husband said to spray. Well, we sprayed it once about 2 weeks ago. I haven't noticed any change in it. We put on a fall fertilizer weed killer. That hasn't seemed to do anything. And I'm wondering, should I or someone dig up the whole area and reseed, or what do you think? Because it is just growing, and it's spreading over the whole yard in the back. It's a very shady, wet area back there.
Yeah. Well, you may have hit on it right there. I mean, it's probably one of the things is it's obviously growing better than the grass is. So trying to correct, you know, if you truly want grass to be growing there, try to think through, is this really an area where I can get grass to grow anyway? I mean, would be one thing I'd think about. I have had people say that they just go with Creeping Charlie because it grows well in that area, and so they just consider that a ground cover and just go with it. I'll leave that up to you, because unfortunately it does get into our flower beds and everything else. So I think that would be one thing to think about. Is this really a place where I can do lawns? But you could certainly do other things in those areas by killing, you know, by getting, you know, hostas or whatever. You could do other things in their area or other ground covers. But as far as, you know, I'm not sure why it didn't necessarily work. The weed killers, you should be seeing something from them. Was it fairly, I'm not sure, in your particular area, was it fairly dry at that time? Or
when we sprayed it?
Right, correct.
I think.
Yeah, because sometimes if it's particularly dry, sometimes the herbicides don't work as well, just because the plants are not able to take it in quite as well. So sometimes just, you know, the weather conditions make it a little different why the herbicides wouldn't necessarily work. As far as digging up, you certainly could try that. Unfortunately, the roots, if you leave a few roots, then it does come back. You may, if there's nothing good in that area, as in no grass, nothing that I want to keep, you certainly could use one of the non-selective herbicides like Roundup or Cleanup or some of those in those areas and just kill off that spot. And then, you know, you may want to wait actually and do that next spring. Otherwise, it's just going to be a dead area all winter long. So you may want to do that next spring if you want to go that route, or just realize next spring that you're going to do the weed and feed herbicide again next spring. When it's actively growing. As soon as it's actively growing, the herbicides tend to work better.
You think it's better to spray than to dig it up and replant, that I would have to spray in addition?
Well, it's certainly up to you. You know, you certainly can dig it out. It doesn't have a really woody, you know, root system like we see with English ivy or some of those. But it certainly is one of those things. If there are a few, just realize that you're probably not going to get all of it by digging it up, and so you're going to have to come back in and do a little bit more digging, or you know, perhaps use one of the broadleaf herbicides at that time.
But you think spring is a better time.
Spring, only because you certainly could do it now and it would work now. It's just the fact that you'd have an open area, you know, all winter long, which you may not want to go that route unless you want to try to do some late season planting of, say, some of the perennials. You're just getting kind of late for that, but so that's why spring might be better just for that.
Yeah, it just started out just a few, and I kind of thought, you know, it looks okay, you know, I can live with it. But it has taken over so much.
Yeah, yeah. And it really is because the turf just probably just isn't growing very well in that spot, and the Creeping Charlies loves it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Let's go back and try and get our Wellington caller. This is line number three. Hello. Is there a call there, line three?
Hello, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the person from Wellington.
Oh, yeah.
I'm harvesting corn, and I couldn't talk the other time.
Okay. Well, we got you now.
Yes. I have a question about my wife's new hybrid tea rose garden.
Uh-huh.
They were just planted this spring.
Uh-huh.
And, they've been blooming their hearts out this late summer and fall here now. And some of them have grown to as much as 4 feet in height. And I was wondering how much to cut them back this winter, if at all.
Well, if they're hybrid teas, you really don't necessarily have to cut them back a lot. Usually what we say is wait until spring to do your major pruning. You may, if they're grafted roses, you may want to do some, you know, covering of them. But generally, we're not going to do that probably till December or so. You want these because they're blooming. As you say, they're blooming. They're still not even, they're not dormant yet. So wait for them to go dormant. And then you can just, you know, pile some, you're really just trying to protect that kind of graft union area. And so you just pile maybe 6 or 8 inches of well-drained soil and then put a little mulch on top of that. And so these stems are going to be, you know, coming out from that, which is just fine. Now, if they're really long and they tend to whip in the wind, if you're in a windy area, then you may want to cut them down to maybe 3 feet or so.
Okay.
If they're really, but that's great that they grew well. It's been a great year to put in plants, I think.
Yeah, I think they're kind of thinking about, towards dormancy, they're kind of slowing down.
Slowing down,
I think.
Right. But probably at least another month before you really think about actually doing anything as far as covering them.
In the past, we have used these styrofoam rose cones to cover them, so I cut them down probably to a foot and a half in height, and I was thinking they're a pain in the wind.
Yeah.
And a dog, maybe, and stuff like that. And I was wondering about mulching them instead. And so how many inches of mulch do you think I should put on them here late fall?
Right. Really just about, if you want to use some well-drained soil, that's usually what we recommend. Or if you have some, you know, well-decomposed compost or something. But usually well-drained soil, about 6 to 8 inches. And you just mound it over.
Yeah,
and then put,
go ahead.
And then put like 3 or 4 inches of mulch on top of that.
Okay.
And that's just fine. And you don't have to do the rose cone thing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that works out just fine.
And what we did after we planted them this spring, then we put a wood chip mulch. It's probably only 2 or 3 inches thick, I guess. That helped conserve moisture and hold the weeds back and everything.
Yep.
So...
Yep.
But you're thinking, you're saying maybe put, maybe just put soil, more soil on top of that?
Right, just to go, yeah, just put soil on top of that, and that's just to cover it for the winter, because you're just trying to protect that graft union, and then a few inches of mulch on top of that. And then next spring, usually around April or so, then you'll start kind of pulling that back a little bit, and then do any pruning that you need to do at that time, and that's when you're going to do your major pruning, usually around the 1st of April.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about putting soil on top of the wood chips, I guess.
But that'll be fine.
Being here on the farm, I was thinking about maybe going out in the harvested soybean field and raking up chopped soybean straw and using that for a mulch.
Actually, that wouldn't be bad either. The soil's a little bit better because it does hold in it actually keeps things cold, which is really what we're trying to do, a little bit better. It's a little bit better insulator, but you could certainly put the soybean straw, is that what you call it, on top of it, and that'd be fine too.
Okay.
Use what you've got.
Then I have another question about the bagworms on spruce trees.
Yeah, boy, they were bad this year.
Yeah,
really bad.
I being here on the farm and next to the field, I thought, whoa, what did we do? I think we killed spruce trees with the herbicides and things for the crops, you know. And got to looking closely, and my gosh, no, they stripped the needles off.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I've had them before, but they never were a problem in the spring, you know, that like they froze out during the winter or something. And you think they could be a problem next when they hatch out of that bag?
Yeah, if you had a problem with them this year, you're going to have a problem next year. Because unfortunately, each one of those bags, and the female bags, can have anywhere from 500 to more eggs, one bag. So it doesn't take long. You just have a few of those female bags out there, and it's enough. You get a huge population. So if you had a problem, of course, this time of year, you know, all you can do is pick them off, which unfortunately there isn't too much, because no spray is going to work. But so next year, about anywhere from June 15th to the end of June, just mark it on your calendar to spray for bagworms. Just mark, because you won't notice them then. They'll be tiny, tiny little things, and you won't even notice them. So you just almost have to put it on your calendar. This is what I'm going to do then.
Okay, June 15th, you say?
Yeah, anywhere from June 15th. I'd probably spray June 15th and then again the end of June. That way you catch any of them that maybe came out a little bit later. But usually that's pretty good timing on most years to get them. But they'll be so tiny you won't notice them. And so you don't, we just don't notice them until it's too late, unfortunately.
what kind of insecticide would you recommend?
Well, the good news is you can use things like any of the bacterial agents, BT. They're sold as Dipel or Thuricide.
Oh, yeah.
If you have
any
of that, that works out just fine.
I do.
Yeah, that's great, and that's the good news. It's really pretty effective on those guys.
Okay, so, thank you much.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call.
How's the harvest? Is he gone?
Yeah.
How's your harvest?
Oh, it's going pretty good. Yeah. You got to hear all the beeps and whistles and everything here in the conference.
Well, that's why I thought I'd ask, because it sounds
like... Corn's, 160, 170 bushel corn.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
Okay, right, take care.
Thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly show on lawn and garden care. The guest is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions, give us a call. If you have a problem you're not quite sure how to solve, or you need some other sort of advice on plant selection, or maybe now you're already thinking about what you're going to do next year, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Now, we have a couple of Urbana folks here. First line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have those lilies that come up in the middle of the summer, just a stalk with a pink flower
mm-hmm.
on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have quite a few plants, and they look fine. Except only two of them had flowers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is that about?
Have they been in there for a while?
Yes.
Yeah. You may need to divide them.
Oh.
Yeah, they get really thick out there. And there are all kinds of names. Resurrection lilies, amazing ladies, naked ladies. I mean, there's all kinds of names for them. But those bulbs will keep getting bigger. You know, they keep dividing to the point where they're so stuffed in there. That they really do need to be divided periodically.
How do I do that?
You could do it now, you know, if you know where they are. You could do it.
No.
or you could do it. You could actually do it next spring. They're pretty tough. They're really.
If I did it next spring, it would be after the leaves die back. If I mark them.
Sure, you can do that, and they still. Or you could do it right after they flower. They're pretty. Most of the time, we'd say not to do it before they flower. But those bulbs are so tough. I would just go ahead and do it even when they have the green leaves on them, to be honest with you. They're really pretty tough.
So the bulbs each would have its own set of leaves?
Yep.
Or some of them?
Yeah. Once you dig it up, you'll find they look like amaryllis bulbs, but when you dig them up, you'll find there'll be all these little ones, big ones, you know, you name it. I have a feeling it's probably what's going on is that they've just gotten too thick in there.
If there's too many of them, can I just trash them and just leave some?
However you want to do it, or you can just give some to your friends or move them around or put them in other spots. I love putting them like right next to hostas. They're a great companion for hostas because they come up, you know, because they look kind of funny without the leaves. So
they don't need the sun?
No, they really don't. I've had really good success. You know, some sun is probably good, but I've had pretty good success putting them in a shade garden and just having them next to my hostas or even next to daylilies. That works out well too. And so you can just sort of plant them here, there, and everywhere and go for it.
Okay. I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Good luck. Let's go on here to somebody else. This is also, I believe, Urbana, line number two.
Yes. I have a beautiful, beautiful ginkgo tree that's about 60 years old. And I'm so sick and tired. I was told that it was a female tree when it was planted. Mm-hmm. I don't know if female trees give out all these little round balls. And
yeah.
Odorific.
Yes, odorific is a good term for them.
At this time of year, I'm constantly sweeping.
Yeah.
But the tree is so beautiful. Well, several people think, why don't you have it cut down?
Oh, no.
It's gorgeous. It's about three stories high. And just the shade is just beautiful over our patio. And I wouldn't have it cut down while I'm still alive. And I'm past 80.
Good for you.
80.
Good for you.
Well past 80. And now, is it or is it not a female or a male tree?
Well, it is a female.
Well, I was told it was a male in 1940.
They told you it was a male?
Yes.
Well.
I thought for years as I'm sweeping, sweeping, sweeping right this time of year, this has got to be a female.
Yep, yep. No, it's a female. Yeah, ginkgos just happen to be one of those that has male and female trees. And we try to always get the male so we don't have to deal with this fruit issue. But unfortunately, they don't really produce fruit till they're pretty old. So by the time they're 10 or 11 or 12 years old, they finally produce fruit. And then you've already had it for 10 years. And who wants to get rid of it at that point?
After it's 10 years old, then it produces.
Yeah, it takes a while. I mean, it does tend to on up. So
by the bushel now.
Yeah. There are some, we were talking about that a little bit earlier, there are some actually injections that certified arborists can do in order to keep the fruit from forming. Now, it won't be 100%. And
if it were 90%.
I know you'd be happy with that. So I think I would start checking in your area and now would be the time to check with them, because as I was mentioning before, timing is so crucial on these guys. You have to do the injections at just the right time.
I know an arborist.
So I'd start talking with them now, find out how expensive it's going to be, you know, when they could do it, all those kinds of things. But, I'm with you. It really is ultimately, unfortunately, it'd have to be done every year. But if it could even reduce it probably by half, you'd probably be happy.
That would be a help. It's just I've had at least 10 bushels.
Yeah, yeah, gosh.
Bushels.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can just need to find somebody that, like, actually, some folks actually eat the seeds inside.
I have advertised. Somebody called me and they said, what's a ginkgo nut?
Oh, no takers, huh? Boy, too bad. Too bad.
Yeah. If you know anybody who wants ginkgo
nuts. Oh, yeah, I've never tried them. Maybe we need to come up with a good recipe for them.
I'll try to find somebody who knows about the injection.
Right.
See,
I just start.
You know about it.
Pardon?
I will invite you to come over.
Oh, there you go.
I know. What's her name? The Thursday night.
Diane Nolan.
Diane Nolan. Sure. Yes, sure. I know her. Should I call her, or could you recommend?
I would just
who could vaccinate this tree?
Vaccinate it? Yeah, it sounds like that. I would just check with a certified arborist, and they're in the yellow pages, and they'll be listed as certified arborists. And there's a bunch of them. We're lucky. There's a bunch of them in the area, and just start having some discussions with them on what it would cost and those kinds of things.
We got a couple. I hope the caller will forgive me. We're really short on time, and I have a couple of more people I'd like to include here. We'll go next to somebody who's on a cell phone. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'm thinking of putting up a trellis between my house and the other house, and it only gets sun about 10 o'clock in the morning in the summer for 2-3 hours, and then it's shaded by my house, and not any more sun until late afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Could you suggest something? I'm trying to make a barrier between the two houses. Would silver lace work on that, or does it need more sun? Or do you have any other suggestions of some kind of vining thing that flowering that would work there?
Yeah, actually, you might be surprised. Some of the clematis or clematis actually are okay in some of the shadier spots.
I'm not having the best of luck
with those.
Growing very fast. I wanted something that would
grow faster.
Fast.
Well, the silver lace vine probably would be fine in that area. It'd probably be okay. There is something called a five-leaf akebia.
What is it?
It's called five-leaf akebia, and it's A-K-E-B-I-A.
Okay.
And that's another one that does okay in the shade. There's also, if you truly want something that's going to be vigorous, there are things like Boston ivy, which is different than English ivy, but it'll grow in the shade. And it's pretty vigorous if you're truly wanting something that's vigorous.
Yeah, I want something a little more vigorous, but I didn't know whether the silver lace would work or not.
It really should be okay.
I do have a rose that's growing on the east side of my house, and it doesn't get a full day's sun either. And it seems to thrive there, but some of my other roses don't seem to. They need full sun. So
I didn't know
whether a rose would go in there too. I do have a clematis at one end of it, but it gets a lot more sun. But I wanted this to go up.
Well, unless you went
more shade.
Right. And now it should still be okay. I'm not sure exactly how much it would flower, but it's certainly more vigorous as the sweet autumn clematis or clematis, the one that blooms in August and September. It's got white flowers,
okay.
And it's very vigorous.
Okay.
That would certainly be one that would do okay, too.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Good
Thank
luck.
Very
right.
much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to get
Bye.
At least one more caller here. We'll go to Polo, Illinois. That's line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a hawthorn tree that loses its leaves every August, re-leafs in September for about 2 weeks, and then loses again. Mm-hmm. I sprayed it this spring with a fungicide, hoping that that would take care of it. I believe it has, I had read that maybe a rust problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there a solution, or is the tree just doomed?
Well, it sounds like it probably, as soon as you started describing it, it sounded like one of the rust diseases, one of the fungal diseases. Probably the thing, you know, with any of the fungicide sprays, I don't know, did you spray in the spring, or when did you spray, or do you remember what you sprayed?
I sprayed it in the spring.
Right. The one thing with some of the fungal problems is that you really need to have a better idea of maybe what problem it is, so that to make sure that we get the right fungicide on it, and then at the right time. I would check with your local, I'm not sure where Polo, Illinois is, but you're, what county are you in? Or?
Gina, where Dixon, Illinois is. Let's say Lee County. Polo's in Ogle County.
Okay.
We farm in the area, but the tree is in Lee County.
Okay. What I would do is find your local extension office. Okay. Usually they're listed in the phone book either under University of Illinois or under the county which you're in, and I would check with them. We do have a thing called a digital diagnostic system where they actually can take pictures of problems and then can send it off, and so to have experts take a look at it. So I don't know, you know, at this point, maybe too late to, you know, obviously too late for this year, but if you had some leaves that were still, you know, you had something there that you could actually show somebody, they might be able to figure it out from there. But I would check your local extension office, and then they can connect you from that point.
I thank you very much.
Good luck.
Right, thank you. Okay. Well, we are going to have to stop, and I'm really sorry that we have one more person that we can't take. Sandy will be back next month. In the meantime, there is a program that we have on our companion television station, a program called Illinois Gardener, and it's on every week, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. Diane Nolan is the host. They feature a rotating panel of folks, some of them from the universities, some of them from area landscaping firms and garden centers. It's a live show, and there is a possibility there on the program for you to call in and ask questions. And it's a very popular program, one of our most popular, I think, on WILO for good reason. So that's another place for questions. And, of course, you can, wherever you live, you can get, as Sandy said, you can get in touch with the extension person who is there in your area, and they can help you out with those kind of questions, mm-hmm. too. And they do also have, you can check out the extension website as well for other information on gardening. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.